But Tim convinced me it was a good idea, and the more I thought about it, the more I liked the idea. I also have to thank Tim for preparing this PowerPoint presentation.
We did it together.
Well, I provided you material, but you did all the work on that. Also, some of the material in this was from my own archives, and other things were provided by people like Al Zuluetta, who I understand is a member of your group, and also whom I worked with at Wolfers many years ago. Also, Mike Johnson, who did a lot of graphic work for Wolfers. And, of course, I also had the opportunity to talk to Jack Wolfers, Richard's son, to verify a few facts that I had gotten a little fuzzy on. Also, I spoke with Ed Weinberg, who has been a member of your group for many years, and was one of the early Wolfers employees there back in the early 60s, and then again in the 70s when we worked together on the auctions. And also, I'd like to thank my friend Ed Rosen for coming here. I work for Ed now, and we put out auction catalogs and price lists. Also, in the course of preparing this, I was thinking back on how to approach this. I know many people in the room probably have memories of Richard, on a first-hand basis, and remember various aspects of his personality. And what I'm going to try to do tonight, though, is just sort of talk about the way we worked on auctions and prepared them and so forth. I'll also give you a little background on how I became associated with Richard.
If you want to.
In researching this a little bit, I was looking in the Lynn Stamp Almanac, and I was amazed to find a listing for Richard in there under famous philatelists. And as you can see from the listing, it's really, really a tiny encapsulation of this man. But one thing they have in there that's not quite right, he was born in 1923, not 1924. But I think the way they came upon that date was by subtracting his age when he passed away, the age of 62 in 1986, and came up with 1924. He was actually born the end of 1923 in Germany, which Jack told me, and I always assumed he was born in Switzerland because he generally gave that impression that he was from Switzerland. But he grew up in Switzerland in the suburb of Zurich called Erlikon. And he did an apprenticeship there as a mechanic, which is another thing a lot of people don't realize. During World War II, he was a mechanic in the Royal Dutch Air Force, and went on to England when the Nazis invaded the Netherlands. And after the war, he came to the United States and was living in Chicago and worked for TWA as a mechanic. There he met his wife, Thelma, and sometime in the mid-1950s, they moved to the West Coast, and he was working for TWA at the airport in, I guess it's Millbrae, is where the airport's located, San Mateo. And he did that for a number of years, but all those years of working on cold concrete in the airline hangars gave him rheumatoid arthritis. And he finally had to just stop that work, and he turned to stamps as a way of supporting his family. And as you can see there, it said he began his business in 1961 with $500 in capital. Well, I asked Jack about that, and he said, well, what he did, he actually sold his collection little by mail order, and eventually opened an office in downtown San Francisco. In 1961. Oddly enough, I first encountered Richard at a Philatelic Fiesta, you can believe this, in 1960 in San Jose, the old St. Clair Hotel. I was about 12 years old at the time. And he and his wife were sitting behind the Bourse table there, and he had in front of him, and I can remember this distinctly, he had Japanese stamps, Swiss stamps, all the sorts of things that he would later sell in his auction. And to me, as a little kid, he was a very impressive figure even then. And all through the next 25 years that I knew him, he didn't really change that much in appearance. He got a little grayer at the temples, and that was about it. And to think that I would be working for him about 10 years later was just something I didn't even imagine. I did get to work for stamp dealers during my time in high school in San Jose, one of whom was Elbert Hubbard, who some of you might know from the revenue catalogs that he produced. And when I came up to San Francisco to go to school, I actually went into Wolfers and I tried to get a job there, but they, at the time they had plenty of help and I didn't go to work for them. Let's see.
Next.
In 1969, well, first of all, this is the corner of Geary and Kearney Street, which it's kind of interesting. That tall building in the center on the Geary Street side is number 12 Geary, where Richard had his first office in 1961. And a couple of years later, he moved around the corner to 127 Kearney Street, where most of you probably remember his shop. And he was there for the rest of his life. There's another building that's showing there, that white one that's right next to the Wachovia sign. That's number 47 Kearney Street, where Stiles & Rumsey now has his auction. So over the course of about 50 years, we've come full circle, and we've got a stamp auction back on Kearney Street. Okay. In 1969, summer of 1969, I answered an ad in the Western Stamp Collector, and Gerson's of Portland, it was Ted Gerson, was a new issue dealer up there, was thinking about opening up a location in San Francisco. And so I answered the ad, and I had an interview with him, and it was a very memorable day. It was July 20th, 1969. I don't know if you remember what happened that day, but that was the day we landed on the moon. And I was at the Francis Drake Hotel and had my interview with him, and in the background there's the television with Neil Armstrong walking around the moon. So you don't forget something like that. And it was also kind of ironic because in the next 6 months that we were at this location, much of what we were selling were new issues for the moon landing stamps, you know, in various countries. We opened in September of 1969, 40 years ago this month. And one of the ways of introducing ourselves to San Francisco was to run an ad in the Chronicle and Examiner offering to sell the 1970 Scott catalogs at cost. This didn't sit too well with Richard Wolfers, who was just around the corner from us. So my real introduction to him was in the form of him coming into the shop and saying, "What do you mean selling these catalogs at cost? Don't you realize you're going to take all the business away from all the dealers in town?" I said, "Well, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't really think of doing this myself. I'll speak to Mr. Gerson about it." And, you know. Well, that was sort of the end of that. And 6 months later, we had to close the shop anyway because we were actually in the front of a coin shop called the Little Mint. And they decided to go into commodity trading at that time, and they said we could not be on their premises because of the rules of the Chicago Board of Trade. And so at that point, Mr. Gerson decided it wasn't really profitable to find another location, and we closed up. Fortunately, I was able to get my job back at a brokerage firm I was working at on Montgomery Street, and that seemed to be the end of that. The next year, let's see, I guess you can. Although there's a very young Russ Samuels there behind the counter, working hard, managing. That's me. Haven't changed a bit, have I? Let's see. Yeah, okay, and then, of course, this is the location where Wolfers was located. As you can see, it's now a FedEx Kinko's shop. The entrance there, above it, there's a little mezzanine. That's where later on in the 70s, the auction describers were ensconced. And
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're going on.
I'm sorry.
Okay, wait. And above that is the second floor window. Now, Richard, sometime in the late 60s, and I don't remember going in there myself, but he apparently had a gallery up there of rare stamps and better items. Later on, we used that for the first auction room. And of course, he was basically a retail dealer, if you want to. And in those front windows, which I don't think are the original ones that were there at the time, but they would lay out collections and put things on easels and all kinds of great treasures for people to look at. And, I remember going in there, he was basically a retail dealer up to that point, too. And he used the generic Brooklyn price list, which in those days was a little pocket thing and sold for a quarter, I think, not like the big catalog it is today. Oh, it was 60 cents by 1973. But I went in there to look at his first auction in 1970. As you can see, it was a grand production. If you see out in the upper right corner, it says licensed auctioneer Ivan L. Buster, who many of you might remember. He was a legendary figure in San Francisco philately. And in any case, in the spring of 1970, I went in there to look at some auction lots. And Richard came bouncing out of his office, all smiles, and I thought, oh, I hope he's forgotten about those catalogs. And he didn't seem to hold that against me personally. And he said, how would you like to get back in the stamp business? And I said, I'd be interested in hearing what you have to say. He said, well, I need an auction describer. And I said, well, I've never done that sort of work, but I'd be willing to learn. And he said, I quit my job once. If I quit it again, I don't know that I can get it back. And he said, well, we can work this out. What time do you get off work? I said, 4:30. He said, well, I'm here till 6 o'clock. We can work for about an hour in the after work during the week, and then come in on Saturdays. So I thought that's great. I could make a little extra money and spend on stamps. And I started doing that, and we did about 5 auctions that year. I didn't, of course, work on this first one, but by about the third or fourth one, I had some of my descriptions in there, and we were going along pretty well with that. In the early days, what we would do today, when I were working for Ed, I typed everything into a computer. I scan the items. We do everything right there at our desk. In the 70s, we would handwrite descriptions, give them to a secretary to type out. Then that would be sent over to the printer, who would have to typeset it. The photos had to be done, laid out on plates in mounts with numbers under them. You had to walk over to the printer, who was located on Mission Street. And I'd walk over there with probably $50,000 worth of stamps under my arm, go in there, and we'd have to lay them down one by one and have them photographed in these giant flatbed type cameras that could be hoisted up vertically. The photographer would go on the other side of a wall and take these shots, and then, of course, I'd have to make negatives, and it was a big production. And when you looked at the kind of product you got out of that, it's almost like, why are you bothering to do this? But that's the way it was done in those days. We have a succession of these early catalogs that were provided to us by Mike Johnson, who has one of the few complete sets in existence. It was number 2. This was in July. Richard's logo there at the bottom of the cover pretty much stayed the same. That was what he used on his stationery and all that. It stayed the same for quite a long time. And if you notice the phone number on the cover, that's the number that Skylar Rumsey has today.
Oh, really?
Yes. He managed, when Wolfers went out of business at the end of the 90s, mid-90s, Skylar, I believe, bought the mailing list and the and got the phone number and a couple of things, but he decided to put his own name on the auctions. Let's see, next, you know, these are just some examples of these early catalogs, which a lot of people may remember, and some of you may never seen them before. When Richard hired me, finally, you know, being a mechanic and being mechanically inclined, he was probably one of the last people I ever saw who used a slide rule. And when he was hiring me, he used that to calculate my salary. And I looked at it, I didn't know what he was doing. I knew what a slide rule was, but I never learned to use one myself. And I just thought that it was kind of humorous that he did that. Okay, this is the last sale of 1970, and it's probably one of the more memorable ones for me because by that time I was working there full-time by October, so this is the one that I really worked on. This is sort of my first real catalog. Yeah. Let's see.
Next.
Yeah, we'll go through that. He also believed a lot in advertising, and this is something that Al Zulueta provided for me. I had forgotten about this. This was the original artwork for an ad that ran in German and possibly Swiss stamp magazines featuring the Fred Wolf collection. And I know a lot of people here remember Fred. He was a great collector of German and other things. And this was a... an ad, just a mock-up of the ad that was submitted to them. This is the 75th auction. This was getting towards the end of my time there. I worked up until 1980, so I have another year to go here. But I worked on about 80 of these auctions. Later on, if you want to go, he started trying auctions in Japan. Al Zulueta actually went to him, went with him to Japan for the sale, and the next one was in 1981.
Where did he get most of his auction material?
Oh, just all over the place. He had all contacts in Europe, the Far East, South America, just you name it. I'll get to some of that though. In the upper corner of that, you can see the Japanese inscription for the location of the sale. And this was done with the help of a Mr. Hatanaka from Tokyo, and he and Richard became very good friends, and he'd come over and stay with Richard, and they had a real admiration for each other. And but Richard always liked to try to feature classic material like this, but he had a wide range of things that we offered in the sales. There were Western covers, Wells Fargo's, Zeppelin mail, just you name it. He had it. One of the interesting things. This just shows sort of the progression of the covered designs as time went by and. Color quality improved. Let me get to the Zeppelin film.
Okay.
And this is the one. This is sort of the style that they evolved into towards the end of Wolfers. It's very similar to Schuyler's catalogs today. Schuyler, I actually first met Schuyler when he was in high school. He was sort of a summer intern at Wolfers. I think it was around 1976, and it's sort of ironic that one of the youngest people who ever worked there now has sort of the auction that most emulates the Wolfers auctions. Yeah, again, this was the little room up above the. Front doors where the auction describers were. When I first started there, I was about the only auction describer, and I sat in the back of the office. By the time I left, we had about six or seven people working in that department, and we moved up to this little room above the front entrance. And some people even, I think, Dick, you remember coming in there, don't you? That's a little room. Okay. Let's see. And then, of course, that's, again, another shot of the auction room windows. We'd have sales on Friday nights and Saturday afternoons. And later on, we ended up moving to the fourth floor because they had gotten to be such well-attended events. I mean, sometimes there'd only be standing room in the back of the room. We had so many people coming to these things. This particular one might have been the night that we offered the Zeppelin sheets. I can't remember. There's a shot of the front table. It's John Peters, who some of you may remember. And there's Richard, myself there, and Richard handling the bid book, and Ivan at the lectern.
Where's John Peters today?
John Peters moved to Arizona.
Yes.
Yeah. And one of the main things that we auctioned during the time I was there that I can remember were the sheets and the Zeppelins. And these were a problem for reproducing in color at the time because they were so large that they couldn't really be attached to the cylinders that were required for doing color separations back then. So we did. We had a photographer take high quality black and white shots. And then from those negatives, we gave them to the printer, and then we tried to do color matches of the three different colors. And we produced a special color insert for the catalog. And some of you might even remember we did posters.
Yes.
That were, and those, I don't know if it's still true today, but in those days you had to do color U.S. stamps at 75% of actual size, or 125, I think. Couldn't be anywhere close to 100%. And so I think we sold a set of three for $10 or something like that.
You know where these came from?
I believe it was a collector in Los Gatos. And the story I was told was they had been sitting in a bank vault since 1930. And I heard this at one of our auctions. Someone was talking about this. I know of a set of Zeppelin sheets of Zeppelins. And you hear that kind of thing and you go, yeah. And this time it turned out to be true. So that was kind of interesting. Another story about this, though, that was almost hilarious, except for those of us who worked there. The night that these were sold, I believe it was a Friday night, our advertising man had arranged with a reporter from the Chronicle to come and cover the auction. And he showed up. There were lots of dealers there, people from Germany and the East Coast and so forth. A fellow named Andy Levitt, who some of you may remember, managed to corner the reporter and talk his ear off. The next morning in the Chronicle, there was a three-column photo of Andy Levitt, and they talked about this auction that had been held that night, and he managed to make the story all about him. And they misspelled Richard's name. They called him Richard Wolfer without the S on the end. And they referred to those of us sitting at the auction table as inky clerks. That was inky. And the upshot of it was that Andy didn't even buy the sheets. They were sold to a dealer in Germany for about $85,000. So, but. Those are some of the fond memories I have. Let's see. There's the first auction room there. You might recognize that fellow there. That's Jim Klutzel, now the editor of the Scott Catalogs. And we're sitting here. There was one occasion I can well remember that we actually had a deadline of I think it was a Friday deadline or something. So we worked all through the night on Thursday. Literally, till like 6 o'clock in the morning to finish getting this catalog finished for the deadline. Also, under Jim's leadership at Scott, you know, all the stamp illustrations have been converted to color. And I saw him at Westpex one year when we were in the process of doing this. And at the beginning of each catalog, you know, there's a little message about the changes in that year's edition. And it has a nice little picture of Jim there. And at that point, his picture was still in black and white. And I said, gee, Jim, all the pictures are changing to color. Why are you still in black and white? The next catalog that came out was in color. So.
Didn't you say that's the King George corner?
Yeah, no, that was Richard made a little joke.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, yeah, that little picture of the king on the wall there is something I found in an antique shop on Clement Street back in 1967 for all of about $10. And I didn't have the money in 1967 to buy it, and I went back about 5 years later. It was still sitting there on the table, and I finally had $10 and I bought it. But it's an actual Dorothy Wilding print of the king. Anyway, let's see what's next. Oh, yeah, here's the old retail counter with all the stamps on the wall. And that framed photo up above is actually a print of the Western Cattle in the Storm from the Dollar Trans-Mississippi. And at the counter there, you can see Rick Horn. I don't know if any of you remember him. He was a retail guy there in the shop. Behind him, unfortunately, a little bit blurred, is a very young Phil Vogt.
A little slimmer.
Yeah. And way in the back, you might be able to see Jim sitting at his desk here. That was sort of the aspect that you're looking at. And the auction room was just way in the back there. And there are two gentlemen at the counter there against the wall. The fellow closest to us is Fred Wilmar, who was an ad man at J. Walter Thompson, who had just retired. He was a stamp collector, and he was a friend of Richard's. And so Richard hired him to do all of his advertising and publicity. And the other fellow who's pretending to be a salesman behind the counter was actually the art director that he worked with, did the advertising layouts. And I think that was also one of our secretaries standing there too, pretending to be a customer. We kind of closed the office to do this photo shoot so that we could control the whole thing. Most of these black and white, actually all these black and white photos were taken to produce. I think that's next. Yeah, this little brochure called "How to Sell Your Collection." And it, very tiny letters, for some reason, I don't know why it was designed that way, it said stamp inside the O of collection. And Richard Wolfer's name is very subtly placed there. And I don't remember exactly, but I have a feeling that he might have been out of town when this was all finished or something. And I don't know that he actually saw the final proof of it. And I remember there was some comment about why is his name so small on the front cover and all that. The only reason these photos still exist is because I'm a pack rat, and I had a file folder full of them stashed away, which I ran across after Tim suggested I do this talk, and I thought, well, now I can do the talk because I have something to show. And then Al Zulueta, who you see there in his white shirt and tie, standing there behind the counter. He joined us in the late 70s, and did both descriptions and retail work and so forth. I think it's probably showing auction lots. And I had forgotten about this article, but in Business Week in 1978, they did an article, a spread on stamp collecting as an investment. If you remember, the late 70s was a real go-go time for stamps. And I think at the time, you were able to put them into IRAs. And then they changed that in 1980, and the bubble burst, and the prices plummeted. But looking back on it, it might not have been a bad idea to let people do that. I don't know.
Pretty.
anyway, that was something that Al provided for us. I'm sorry he couldn't be here tonight. I was hoping I could have had him throwing a few comments into this too. And in the end, there's Richard, and just as a little aside, on the back of this photo he wrote, "Do not use in brochure." For some reason he didn't like this picture. I think it's a charming picture. It's a great picture of Richard. Really, really captures something. And in closing tonight, I found it ironic that today is 09-09-09, or 999. And knowing Richard, that's what he would say, is 999. Okay. So if you have any questions or comments or memories you'd like to, yes?
Yes, did Richard collect anything himself?
He actually did collect hotel posts of Switzerland, which is a pretty obscure thing that you can collect. I mean, I had never seen any before until he showed me this question. Yes?
Well, I understand that. I was an undergrad at the University of Nevada in the middle 60s, and I decided, you know, what I learned about research, I made a formal decision. I'm going to make stamp collecting my lifelong hobby.
Yeah.
And I got to apply some of this research. That means I got to go literature. Well, for us in those days, to come over to San Francisco was a rare treat.
Sure.
The next time I came over, I saw it at a stamp shop, and it turned out to be Richard Wolfers. And I mentioned, you know, my interest at the counter. The next thing I know, I'm talking to Richard Wolfer.
Oh, yeah.
He took me upstairs, showed me his library, showed me a couple of the key books and some books that he had. And so it became my passion. I actually collected the philatelic literature of Switzerland. That's my biggest interest.
Yeah.
And the first books I have, I bought from Richard Wolfers.
Yeah.
And he got me established in my hobby, if you will.
Yeah.
This club, when I joined this club, we used to meet at his place.
That's what Steve was mentioning.
Yeah. We would have
been,
dinner
now,
at
now that he mentioned it, I remember that.
Yeah, we would have dinner at Hoffman's on Market Street. And we'd take our 2-block walk to Richard's and go upstairs. And, we had our meeting there.
Yeah. Was that in the second floor auction?
Second floor, yeah.
He was also a member of the California Collectors Club.
That's
and
right.
The Collectors Club of San Francisco.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And Ed Weinberg, who I had a nice chat with the other day, was telling me that he worked for Richard twice. He worked both as a retail guy in the early 60s. And Richard, I think, opened up a shop in Carmel sometime in the 60s, and Ed went down there to run that for him. But you know how these things go. They look at the numbers, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't last, you know. So, but then again, he worked for Richard in the early 70s when I really got to know him well. He was a scriber there with me. One of the funny things when we were describing together, there was a fellow there named Joe Van Gastel, who I don't know if any of you know.
Oh, Van Gastel, sure.
And he was sort of in charge of parceling out the stuff to work on. And for some reason, he always managed to give Ed things he didn't like, and he'd give me things I didn't really care to work on. So we'd just switch them, he never knew the difference. And we, it was like instead of saying, "Wow, what are you best at doing?" He would almost intentionally give you the wrong things to work on. But we had fun with that, and he was still living in the city at the time, and we'd often just go ride the bus home together on Sutter Street. But Ed mentioned that he had been hired actually by a fellow named James Vaudemont Coeur, who many of you know too.
He's a member of this club.
Member of the club, yeah.
Yes.
I assume he's still living.
Yes, he is still here. He's an honorary member.
He must be close to 90.
He is past 90.
Yeah. But he had been an early Wolfers person too.
But did he work for Wolfers?
Apparently, Ed was telling me that he worked in the early 60s. Yeah.
Well, McElroy.
And Clell, yeah, Clell, I worked with, that's another name, yeah, Clell, I worked with
him. He was a member of this club also.
He was a member, and he was a school teacher, and he'd come in and help after school, and on weekends, and worked there too, as a describer. Very knowledgeable in Canada and in British North America.
You know, you showed that catalog of the Japanese, the second catalog. Mm-hmm. I collected postal stationery, and I had a couple Japanese items, and I had taken them. I used to go in there about once a month and rummage through the stationery. Anyway, I had these couple Japanese stationery items, and I like to throw these in the auction if they have any value. He says, "Well, we'll check it out." I didn't know at the time, but he meant he'd probably send them to Japan, check it out.
Yeah,
anyway, they were to sell two items in one lot. Estimate was $25, something like that. And then when I called after the sale, that's in the days when I was had no money at all, I was talking to talk to Joe Van Gastel,
yeah.
And I says, "What did lot number go for?" And he gets back on the phone in a few minutes, and he says, 555. And I said, "Oh, thanks." And I go, "Wait a minute. $55.50? Wow, I got twice. What the estimate was. That was fantastic. They went for $555. they had some special cancel, and I still have no idea what they were. And I go, wow,
Yeah, I mean, some of the things we got there, we were learning too.
Yeah, but it was Japanese. Nobody in Japan was crazy for it,
Well, that was the thing about Richard, too. He went out of his way to get things expertized. We'd send things off to Japan, to Europe. That was one of my jobs, too, was to process things for expertizing. And I had to learn who was going to get, which... I mean, even in Germany, there were like 10 or 20 different experts just for Germany that you'd have to send things to. Yes, sir.
When was the last auction, and what happened to you?
I wasn't there at the time. I know it ended sometime around 1996, I think. And that's a subject that I've only heard secondhand, so I can't really speak on it with any authority. It wasn't a good ending. Fortunately for Richard, he had been dead for 10 years when it happened. I like to just sort of think of it as ending when I left.
So who owned it after his
son? Well, his son had taken over the business with his wife, Thelma, and there were other people involved with it. And there was a fellow named Dwayne Garrett, who some of you have heard of, and he apparently was the fellow who handled the whole thing, and... He came to an unfortunate end, as some of you know. So, but
actually went to the Russell Haas family. Put the money in
the Haas family. Yeah, the Haas Russell family. And Haas. Russell yeah, Haas. Yeah.
Oh no,
they
no,
put
no,
some
no,
money into it.
Well, they were the ones who.
But see, I wasn't really involved with that at that point, and I just heard things secondhand. The time that I was there, I consider to be sort of the golden age of that company. When I left, to be honest with you all, I was kind of burned out. I mean, working there for 10 years. During the 10 years that I was there, our typist who did the typesetting. Later on, she actually had a composer and was able to do the typesetting there in the office. Matter of fact, we had a special IBM Selectric ball made that had the pound symbol and the mint symbol and the U symbol and the cover symbol. Richard had that made in Hawaii, of all places. So we were able to do all that work there. But in any case, she was keeping a list of all the people who had worked there. And when I left, I said, it seems to me we never had more than 10 or 12 people working here at one time, but there were an awful lot of people who came through here. Do you happen to remember how many there were? And she said there were 75 people in those 10 years. Mm-hmm. Which led Richard, and I almost forgot to mention this, to often make the comment that he was running a training school for stamp dealers. Because if you think about it, a lot of people in the Bay Area, Phil Vogt, Stanley Piller worked there for a year, Ed Weinberg, of course. You had, Skyler Rumsey, of course.
Klutzel. Yeah.
And Jim Klutzel, of course, went on to the Stockhouse. He actually worked for other auction houses after that, too. Yeah. But, and those are just the people that I worked with. I mean, there were lots of other people came through there after me. And I think by the time Margie retired, sometime in the mid-80s, I think the list was up to like 125 people. It was a great experience, and I learned. It's true. It was like going to a university for philately. Yeah.
Plus, you had. Richard was a great marketer, and perhaps you could fill us in on the story about the ladies that he had for one part of his publicity, where they plastered stamps all over their bodies.
I never heard that.
You
story.
Never heard
what
that.
Was that?
Well, I guess I just heard
the
second hand, so I don't know if it's true.
I never heard that. Anybody else ever hear that one?
No, I guess I've made it up. Well, with that,
Dream Wolfer's mythology.
I'm sure people could ask questions all night.
But Russ, I want to.
They wouldn't qualify as never in.
I want to. Give you a copy of our special certificate suitable for framing, commemorating your talk this evening, and a copy of something that I hope you don't have from the Winged Heels of Mercury.
Oh, very nice, thank you.
That's one of we're getting down to the last bunch, by the way. So hang on.
So I will do that, thank you.
And thank you,
so much.
Once again.
Thank you. Bye.
We drive up with
No, I drove up with